This week's parsha is Vayeshev, referring to the period where Jacob, having returned to his father's land, and as commentators state, hopefully that his exile, his journeys have come to an end, and likewise, all of his problems have also come to their demise. Nevertheless, it immediately begins off in the third verse with a very, very strange connection here between Israel, as Jacob is now referred to, although sometimes we will find in scriptures that follow the name of Yaakov is mentioned here and there. But as we explained last week, we're not speaking about two names, but rather to identify Yaakov with his different levels of consciousness. Yisrael indicating a higher level of consciousness, Israel, a higher level of consciousness, although it has been taken today to mean Israelite. In other words, if you live in Israel, you're an Israelite. However, scriptures is not referring to the aspect of what we experience on this physical realm, but rather revealing different forms of and different stages, different levels of consciousness. And here it says, and Israel loved Joseph from all of his children. And that's rather very strange. Jacob or Israel had 12 sons. Why would he choose to love the son known as Joseph? Furthermore, it says because he when he gave birth to when Rachel gave birth to Joseph, at that point in time, Jacob is very old. And so the commentators go on to say that, well, since he was so old, and I guess when you're more matured, you begin to understand children a lot better. And so therefore, at that time when his consciousness was raised, he therefore would be closer related with, connected with Joseph, because of this on and near's relationship that existed between him and his son. However, if this would have been the answer as to why he loved Joseph far and beyond the other children, then what about Benjamin? Benjamin, in fact, was a brother, a complete brother, not a half-brother, as the others were. He was younger than Joseph, his brother. And yet, it appears as if Israel loved Joseph from all of his children, and that, of course, includes Benjamin. Rather quite strange that to expect a man who is classified as a chariot meaning again one like a chariot connected to something and also connected to another. It is like the saddle. In fact, chariot is not a true, correct translation of the word. It is like the saddle, which is closer to the Hebraic word that is implied when we speak of Jacob and all of the patriarchs as the link, just as Merkav. Merkav in Hebrew means the saddle. For the saddle connects the rider with the horse. So you have two sides, two elements, both being connected to one. And that's what these patriarchs were all about. They could connect, provide us with this bonding of higher levels of consciousness, which once we can make our connections with these patriarchs, they in turn could support us with different forms of flawless universe energies. Abraham was Hesed, right column, and therefore we could tap into the life force of God when Hesed is needed. And more importantly, when you're looking for antimatter, which we have discussed on other occasions, which is what we're really looking for. We're hoping to transform ourselves into a complete entity of antimatter, because then you can enjoy the benefits of a wave. You can enjoy the benefits of a quantum. You can enjoy the benefits of going beyond and overriding the limitations of time, space, and motion. And if you want Isaac, he connects for us into this desire. Some people just don't have desires. Everyone has a desire, but there are some people have more intensive, higher levels of consciousness of desire, and that is lower. Now, if you want to increase that, you want to expand that aspect of your consciousness, because without desire, then you have no need for anything. But when you have desire, and as our desires through the study of Kabbalah can indeed increase, then you know that's the danger. If you're going to desire to receive for the oneself, then you can run into a great deal of problems. For that is short-circuitness. But Isaac represents the kind of desire to receive for the sake of sharing. And then you have Jacob, central column energy, that most important element, that's the key element in providing one with a flawless universe in his or her midst, one that is not subject to chaos, pain and suffering. And so this was Jacob or Israel, that restrictive technology by which everything then flows harmoniously from that flawless universe, the energy of the light force of God. And so we're referring to these kind of people. Incidentally, Joseph is also a chariot for the sphere of your sword, also in another dimension, in a dimension that is predominantly free of randomness, of chaos, of pain and suffering. And so we're discussing people of this nature, people of this greater level of consciousness. So how can we accept scripture superficially as it is written and truly comprehend that the Torah is fostering or condoning the love of a parent to one child over another? For what did that And then what happens? He makes him a coat, a garment, just for Joseph. And then immediately the next verse, what does it say? And his brothers saw this, that their father loved Joseph more than all of his brothers, and they began to hate him. In fact, they could not even speak with him in peace. It is so far-fetched to associate these petty aspects to people with such high levels of consciousness and expanded awarenesses of what's going on in their life. And to complicate matters further, back to confuse us maybe a little more, it says that Joseph had a dream. And he tells his brothers the dream. And they continue to, in fact, increase their hatred for him. And he tells them the dream, which was about bales in the field. And his bale, they all, each of the brothers were in possession of a bale, and his bale rose up, and all of the bales around his bale began to bow down, in other words, as to be subservient to Joseph. Well, what do you think, and how do you think Joseph's brothers would react to this kind of story? And then, of course, assuredly, they said, are you trying to indicate to us that you are ultimately going to rule over us? And it adds again, and they continue to hate him. And he has another dream, without going into the details. And it's the same kind of a dream, and they became angry with him. And this time he tells it to his father as well. And they became very envious. But with the assistance of Zohar and Rabbi Isaac Lerner, we can begin to make some sense out of what Scripture is trying to teach us. It goes without saying that the main characters of this particular section of Torah in Vayeshev are far beyond reproach, are far beyond the concepts as we understand them of hatred and envy. But rather, what Torah is trying to teach us on a very simple level, that while it is natural, for parents to feel closer to some children, some of their children, as opposed to the others, or that they even extend greater love to some over the other, and we've heard these things all the time, brothers, sisters complaining. What Scripture is indicating here, coupled with what Rabbi Isaac Lerner will tell us in his Gates of Reincarnation, that each one of these brothers represented a totally different dimension. Why? Because their roots are their souls. emerged, sometimes even from opposite perspectives of the same thing, or merely different. And that to understand that why one parent might choose to favor one over another does not just happen, but rather in a prior lifetime, there's a closer connection, closer relationship between these two people, as opposed to other children whom the father or the mother did not have that kind of relationship. So there is so much involved here. Now, does that justify a parent favoring one over another? The answer is, of course not. For scriptures teach us that for all the right reasons, because as the Zohar states, when it says he loved him more, you can't say he loved him more. You're talking about chariots. You're talking about people with such elevated consciousness that it's just too outlandish to assume that these characters had gotten into the mundane habits, the mundane behaviors of what we observe on this level, far beyond that. However, what scripture is teaching us, and this answers why he favored Joseph over and above all the others, is to state that because Joseph was also on the lower triad, central column, Jacob in the upper triad of the shield of David was creating a setting, a landscape of such affinity. They both represented the idea of central column. So it goes without saying that children born with signs that might even be opposing to the father and the mother, this could explain then for us to understand why it does not justify favoritism. It does not justify choosing one child over another. Because what emerged here in scriptures was hatred. And no parent has a right to favor one over another. Because now in this present lifetime, this is the setting for this landscape. Oh, sure, prior lifetimes, also indicated by the different signs, different characteristics, different molds for different people, designated by the signs that we are governed. But ultimately, favoritism, despite all of the validations, can only bring hatred. And therefore, it behooves parents, it behooves brothers, who also may favor one over another, one sister over another, to be cognizant that these, the different dimensions, or the likeness of dimensions, emerged as a result of prior incarnations. However, in this particular setting, we are now brought into this situation, into this environment, by which we must overcome these malchut level characterizations of each other and connect with the soul at a soul level, where at the soul level, very little difference very little different. We're going right back almost to the beginning, where we were all one soul. Going back to that point in time and overcome what we are faced with now in achieving and going back to our consciousness, to elevate our consciousness, where we suddenly, on a quantum level, begin to feel the affinity, the unity with so many more people, people who are not even related to us. And this is what we have experienced in the center. People from different walks of life, people of different signs, and yet, because of our efforts to strive to achieve higher levels of consciousness, that one of those stumbling blocks, one of the impediments might be closeness in character, closeness being under one sign, or having closer relationships in prior lifetimes. All of these will explain away why we are different, why we have our preferences. However, this does not excuse the idea that we must rise above the influences of the signs of the zodiac. We must rise above the differentiations that occurred in prior lifetimes and achieve this feeling of oneness with all that is around us, for that represents the life force of God. Well, God is not involved in this concept known as separation, which is fundamentally the reason why there is so much strife, war, pain, suffering, as a result of the separation. Not only in our consciousness, but this is the way we behave. We feel closer to some and not others. Sure, there are valid reasons for that, as scripture says. But nevertheless, that does not release us from our responsibility to begin to achieve higher levels of consciousness, to achieve that ultimate idea of being a part of the life force of God, and consequently, as God, will never experience the chaos, the pain, the suffering that we mortals do, but go beyond those limitations of time, space, and motion, separation, etc. And there's also one other story. That's why I love this section, because it presents such ridiculous connotations. And so ultimately, what do they do with this brother? They sell him. Sell him as a slave. How can you sell your own brother? And again, the question would be, in fact, they were even contemplating at one point to even kill him. Well, I don't want to sound very brute and crude, but I have seen on this physical level people not involved in Kabbalah, obviously, because this would be so revolting to a Kabbalist contemplating the death of a brother, contemplating harming a close one. I remember, going back about 20 years ago, in our California, Los Angeles branch, there were two brothers who were the fathers of young people who were attending the center. And we heard the story about out of a very severe, hot dispute between one brother and another, without going into the details as to why each one felt that they were right. One brother took acid and thrust it into his brother's eyes and blinded him. This is a horrible thing for me to even repeat. But when we read scriptures, well, that's what scripture wants to teach us. And when you live in this non-spiritual atmosphere, consciousness, then anything can happen, even to the extent, as we have heard sometimes the expression, why, this man would even sell his own mother down the river. We've all heard those expressions. What does that mean? It means we face up to the fact that Satan, in this physical material world, can play a number of tricks upon us. Even to the extent where we want to harm some of our very close ones. I've had cases where sons were prepared literally to strike out at their own parents. It sounds so incredible, but for me to conceal that which we know exists, unfortunately, in this malchut reality. So let us never deny the fact that in this malchut level, and that's why all efforts, and that's what Torah is trying to teach us, that we've got to become like these chariots. Make every effort, because once you're there, sure, the question we raise, how could they have thought the way they did? When they are on this level, they could think like that. Yes, but it's teaching us that once you can rise above that level, then you're talking about another matter. And I'd like to mention one other story here, story that I know most people who provide interpretations, explanations about her kind of shy away from this story. And I'm referring to the story in this week's section about chapter 38, where Yehuda marries and he gives birth to three sons. His wife gives birth to three sons. That's a story where Yehuda, father, takes a bride for his oldest son, Er, and her name was Tamar. And it continues to tell us in verse 7 that Er was, who was the firstborn of Yehuda, obviously conducted his lifestyle, which was evil in the eyes of God, and God put him to death. And then Yehuda came to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, and wanted to present her to his second son. And his name was Onan, and Onan, who knew that he could not bear children, and without going into too many details, and he also died. Now, when Yehuda saw this situation about his daughter-in-law Tamar, he said, you know what? I don't want you to marry now my third son. I'd rather you sat in mourning as a widow and return back to your household. And because maybe he'll also die like his brothers. And it says that many days passed, and his wife, Yehuda's wife, passed on, Bathsheba. And he felt great remorse, depression. And he went to the pasture, his sheep. And it was told to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, who had returned to her home, that your father-in-law is coming here to shear his sheep. And she took off her clothes of mourning, of widowhood, and she dressed beautifully in a veil, and she sat at the entrance for anyone who was coming into the city. For she saw that the third son, whose name was Shelah, grew up, and Yehuda did not present her to his younger son. And it says that Yehuda noticed her, but he couldn't recognize her because she was veiled. And he thought she was a prostitute. And he said, thinking she was a prostitute, well, he'll go to bed with her that night. For he did not know that was his daughter-in-law. And as a true prostitute would behave, she said, now, wait a second. You know, I don't do this thing for nothing. What are you going to give me? He says, oh, I'll send you many gifts. Don't worry. When I get back home, I'll send you goats, sheep. She says, you know, that's fine, but I want a little guarantee that this is what you will do when you return home. Can you imagine a story that we're reading here? I want some guarantees. And so he says, well, what guarantee shall I give you? And she says, your signet ring. And also your staff that you hold in your hand. He gave it to her. He had sexual relations with her as she became pregnant. And then she removed the veils. As she returned to her clothing of widowhood. And Yehuda sent his goats, as he had promised, through his trusted friend, to retrieve back the guarantee that he had given, which means a signet ring, from this woman. And lo and behold, he couldn't find her. And he asked all the people, did you see a prostitute sitting here? And they said, we don't remember ever seeing a prostitute, because she probably was there for just a couple of moments as he came, and then, you know, they both disappeared. And he returns back to Yehuda. He says, no, I didn't find her. And even the people of the town said they don't know that there was a prostitute sitting there. And it says after 3 months, it comes back to Yehuda that his daughter-in-law had relations, which she should not have because she was betrothed to the youngest son, Shelah. Although he had no intention, obviously, of presenting Shelah, his youngest son, to Tamar. And he became so incensed. And he says, take her out and let's burn her to the stake. You imagine? And they take her out. And she sends a message to her father-in-law saying, To the individual to whom this signet ring belongs to is from whom I became pregnant. And of course, Yehuda recognized it. And he felt this was his punishment because he had not presented. I'm just reading, mind you, no interpretations. All of this is no interpretation. Sounds like an outlandish, almost incredible story, and something you probably would not have expected to find in Torah. And he says, this is probably a punishment because I did not present her to my youngest son, Shelah. And he no longer continued to know her. I mean, like, he's in self-denial. And when she gives birth, she gives birth to twins. And my friends, from that relationship between Yehuda and Tamar emerged King David. And ultimately, the Mashiach. An incredible story. However, I'm not going to provide you with all the answers to all of the questions, but just to say that the deeper significance here is, says Zohar, is about soulmates. Can you imagine a story that is so couched in confusion, distortion, prostitution, contradiction, and almost, we might say, almost the fact that here he was about to put her to death because of what she did, and suddenly he turns hypocrite and says, no, it was me, and therefore don't put her to death. Very confusing. But this is what this parsha is all about. To try to teach us. And of course, more importantly, to listen to this Torah reading on Shabbat. This form of confusion, hypocrisy, distortions, probably most of us, if not all of us, are guilty of one time or another. And so Torah did not want to be in self-denial, say, well, these things don't happen to people, to tell us, yes, they can. But understand that we're talking about Yehuda and Tamar. We're talking about the origins of soulmates. Shabbat shalom, everybody.